Hour number two of 3D on this Monday morning. Darren, Derek, and Donick with you every day, 10 to 2, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It feels like round one was a long, long time ago. I feel like the Blackhawks series was, I think my hair was a lot darker. I don't think I had facial hair. It just seems like a long time ago. But we're going to talk about everything that happened in Chicago this weekend, and to help us with that is Chris Cook with the Chicago Tribune. He covers the Blackhawks for them. Chris, how you doing?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Good. Doesn't round one feel like a long, long time ago?
Hey, my grass is cut. I've got a little tan. I'm relaxed. Yeah, it seems like quite a while since we watched those guys skate around on the ice. And, you know, I know the Blackhawks are still reeling from that, but you guys had a great run. Your team had a great run. It was fun to watch from the outside.
We had Jeff Kelty on, who's the Predators' chief amateur scout, last hour, and we all laughed with him. Chris, we feel like, you know, yes, run to the Stanley Cup final, you should say, of course you've arrived. But we, even more to expound on that, feel like the Predators have arrived, because every time, you know, they announced that in the United Center, they got booed. That means, you know, you've
right.
definitely arrived.
Anytime it was their pick or anything that had to do with the Predators, boo! That was great.
Chicago didn't take it well, trust me. That was stunning. Not so much that the Predators won, although I did pick the Blackhawks to win the series, but how they won and just how poorly the Blackhawks played, and they just didn't show up in those games. I mean, the urgency level was awful. It really sparked this kind of shakeup that you're seeing with the Blackhawks the last couple of days here. And, you know, when you get your behind handed to you like that, you've got to make some changes, and that's certainly what General Manager Stan Bowman is doing.
Where is Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville right now? Because just trying to read things from afar. Willie was there, but just kind of reading things on Twitter, watching the coverage, it feels like Quenneville wasn't on board exactly about Friday night. Where is all that? I know you guys had a chance to catch up with Q when he showed up on Saturday to the draft. What's your take on what's going on maybe behind the scenes?
Well, Joel said all the right things that he's going to say, and so did Stan. But this all started back even before these moves over the weekend, when the Blackhawks just fired Mike Kitchen, assistant coach, to Joel Quenneville, who's maybe Joel Quenneville's best friend. And they did not consult Joel Quenneville. They just said, hey, your guy's out. We're making some changes. And that really angered Joel Quenneville, according to a couple sources I talked to. And it's not getting any better, the relationship here. And now you're talking about a team that's in some major transition. So Stan Bowman got rid of a couple of big-name players and big-name contracts, big-term contracts, in Nicholas Jarmolson and Artemi Panarin, and brought in a couple of guys who are younger and have longer-term contracts. But now what does Joel Quenneville do? He's the guy who got to get. He's got to get those guys in the lineup, get this team back to winning where it was before. So it's I think the relationship is pretty tense right now. Neither side's going to come out and say that. But from what I'm hearing behind the scenes, that Joel Quenneville is unhappy with what's happening.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being shocked, 1, not, you know, didn't even blink, didn't bat an eye. Where are you with all the moves that they made? On just how active the Blackhawks were? And obviously, as you know, it started Friday morning. I mean, well before the draft started.
If you're going to put a number on it, I'm probably at a 4 or 5 as far as the amount of things that they did. I mean, it was clear that they were going to make some changes, and Stan Bowman, when they cleaned out their locker on locker cleanout day, was as angry as I've ever seen him. And I know the people above him, John McDonough, Rocky Wirtz, were just as angry, if not more so. And I believe that they were going to retool this roster, but I would say I was a 7 or 8 considering who they dealt. I was really surprised they got rid of Nicholas Jarmolson. I understand that he's a little bit older than the guys they brought in, Connor Murphy. He's got a little bit more term on his contract. But here's the deal. This guy is, in my opinion, among the top 10 defensemen in the NHL. If you're talking about just defense, he's right up there near the top. Offensively, he doesn't move the puck as well. But this is a guy who arguably was the Blackhawks' best defenseman throughout much of the season. I know Duncan Keith was there, but I would put him and Jarmolson right together. So this is a blue line that's not stocked with a whole lot of players. The depth is not there, as we saw, certainly in the playoffs. And to get rid of a guy like that, a heart and soul guy who's won 3 Stanley Cups, was really, really surprising to me. Now, Artemi Panarin's had a great brief career at the Blackhawks, a terrific goal scorer. He was not quite visible during the playoffs until second half of that final game four. So to see him go, maybe not so much a surprise, because he's going to get paid in a couple years, and Blackhawks aren't going to want to pay that kind of money. But, boy, Jarmolson and Panarin, those are two pretty big guys to lose off this roster.
We're talking with Chris Cook from the Chicago Tribune, talking about what all the Blackhawks did this last week. And Chris, it looks to me like one of the huge keys to this big trade will be Connor Murphy, because it's not like you save a lot with the price tag on Murphy. He makes a fair amount of money compared to Hjalmarsson. But as you mentioned, he's younger, and they think he can fill those shoes, which, as you just illustrated, are not hard shoes, not easy shoes to fill because of Hjalmarsson's value over the last long haul. So what do you think about Murphy? What are you hearing about him?
Well, certainly he's a lot younger than Nicholas Hjalmarsson, and his contract runs a couple more seasons. So that was a big reason for it. This is a guy whose possession numbers aren't very good when he was with Phoenix or Arizona now. So he's an up-and-coming player. He is a little more grit. He's a right-handed shot, which is something the Blackhawks really needed on the blue line. That was kind of a big key to it. This is obviously a player that Stan Bowman and his scouting staff believe can take that next step. But that's a pretty big step if you're talking about Nicholas Hjalmarsson level. So he's a guy who's going to have to play above what he played last season and the season before that. And it's also really going to, as I mentioned, going to tax kind of the rest of the Blackhawks' blue line. And it's really going to make Corey Crawford the key this season, the goaltender. He had a very good season last year. He started off very strong. He got injured, and he didn't come on quite like he wanted to for about a month or so. And then he was very good later on in the season. But you're going to need an effort from him. You're going to see a whole lot of Corey Crawford on the ice in goal, and he's got to play at that kind of caliber that he's in the top two or three goaltenders in the league. Now, if he doesn't, it's going to be a very long season for the Blackhawks.
One of the things you keep hearing is how Stan Bowman has tried to create more cap space, and he's got to be creative in how he does it. This is the price to pay when you've got so many great players and you've had great teams for so long, and it seems to get harder every year. One thing that I hear that he's trying to do is move Marcus Kruger's contract. He gets a bonus, I think, on July 1st. Do you think he'll be able to shed that contract after they pay that money?
Yeah, I don't think Marcus Kruger will be a member of the Blackhawks come July 2nd or 3rd. I think they probably already have a deal in place. There was a lot of rumors there that he was going to head to the Vegas Knights. And I think that had Marian Hossa, that story that Marian Hossa came out, that he will not play next season. I think that may have an impact on it, but I also do think this bonus on July 1st has something to do with it. I don't think Marcus Kruger will be on the Blackhawks. It's a contract that he was rewarded for signing a lesser deal a season before that. So he got $3 million a year, three plus. And he's a fine complementary player. He's a great penalty killer, one of the best in the NHL. But when a guy can score two or three goals, you can't pay him over $3 million per season and just kind of carry that cap it if you're the Blackhawks. So Marcus Kruger, I don't believe, will be on this team in about a week or so. And then we'll see what kind of Stan Bowman does to fill in some space there, because they're over the cap right now. So there's no way that I can see Marcus Kruger fitting. And even July 1st, when that rolls around, they're not going to be a big player in free agency, because even when they get rid of Kruger's contract, there's not a whole lot of space there. Now, a big deal is what's going to happen with Marian Hossa's contract. He's going to go on long-term injury list. It's a matter of when the Blackhawks put him there. If you do it before the season starts, then they have room now to sign some free agents. If they do it after the season starts, then they'll have more room to work during the season and maybe come trade deadline, bring in a bigger piece. I think they'll go with the latter there. I think they're going to wait to put Hossa on long-term. And that means that really not going to be major players come July 1st as far as free agency.
Chris, what have you been able to find out about the future for Marian Hossa? It's such a tough thing. I mean, he's an incredibly classy player. And, of course, our perspective a lot of times comes from Brent Peterson, who had him as a very young player in junior in Portland. Just speaks so well about Marian. He's been such a great influence, I know, on a lot of the young players in Chicago. So, long term, is there any hope that he'll be able to play again after, I guess, basically taking this season off?
Well, let me just say, I've been around newspapers and a reporter for many, many years, and Marian Hossa is my favorite athlete to deal with. And as you know, I don't really care what happens on the ice, although it's fun to watch guys perform. But from talking to an individual and just working with a guy who may have just lost a hockey game, may be injured, Marian Hossa is the classiest, nicest athlete I've ever dealt with, and it was just a shame to see this happening. I think there's no question he's not going to play hockey again in the National Hockey League. The Blackhawks are saying that he's not going to play next season, and that's just wording right there. It's semantics. If you say he's retired, then you've got all kinds of salary cap implications. Right. But if you say he's not playing right now, then you can go ahead and put him on long-term on injury list. There are several players in NHL who are in
the Chris Pronger type of thing. Yeah,
Dave Boland down in Phoenix. these are guys who are not going to play again, but they can't announce their retirements because they have too many big implications for salary cap. But Marian Hosa is not going to come back at age 39 if you're taking a season off and playing the National Hockey League. I just don't see that.
Chris, good stuff. It's going to be interesting to see how this is all going to look, and still more work to be done this summer. And, man, the season's not too far off. Thanks for doing this. We'll talk to you down the road.
Good to talk to you guys. Take care.
All right, that is Chris Cook with the Chicago Tribune. We do appreciate him joining us. And, man, it is hard to think. Like, how could you actually put them as the favorite? They were the number one seed in the Western Conference last year. They were the division winner in the Central. I don't think you can make that case right now.
They've
I know they're
issues.
Still the Blackhawks, but
they've got issues
on paper. Yeah, there's a lot. By the way, just what he said, how can you make the case? I mean, the strength of the Predators, and they have a lot of strengths, but the defense, Chicago's defense, man, they got holes.
Hey, Connor Murphy is a nice player, but Nick Jalmerson has been a linchpin for them. Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith are getting up there in age. They've had a lot of mileage, especially Seabrook. They are thin back there. What, Derek, what did we keep talking about when that Blackhawks series was going on? The depth is a problem. They have traded a lot of assets to try to keep winning now. It is catching up to them. Now this Hossa thing has happened. They've made these moves. There's just no way that they're as good as they've been.
Well, it you know, in their defense, it's worked out. You know, they've mortgaged their future, you know, to win some championships. And they did. They did. But now this is the part that I believe that the fan base must brace for, is the downfall.
And
now,
they haven't done it yet.
This is what, you know, we've heard the Chicago fan, oh, you know, look at what we've done. We have these many rings. How many rings you guys got? You know, now – when you start to see the decline and the contracts start catching up with this team, now they got to let people go. I wonder where these same fans are going to be when, you know, the Blackhawks are fighting, you know, to get in the playoffs or even not getting in the playoffs or losing again in the first round. Where are these fans going to be? It was great when they mortgaged their future and won a few championships, but when a Piper comes to regroup, recoup, what are you going to do?
Late Friday, well, not late. It was in the 8 o'clock hour time. The Predators had picked 30 in the first round. They took a young man from Finland. He's 18 years old. You'll hear from him next. Willie caught up with him at the draft at the United Center. You will hear that interview with him next on 3D. ESPN 102.5, the game.
Here comes Ellie right now, so we'll get the headset on him here momentarily and get a chance to meet the newest Predator. He's been through the car wash, done a lot of pictures. He has done some interviews, and now here he is on the radio. Ellie, thank you very much for joining us here, and welcome to the Nashville Predators.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, this has, I'm sure, been a whirlwind for you these last couple hours here, watching and waiting for your name to be called, and so always a fun question to ask. What was your first reaction when you heard your name called, and I'm sure you had a lot of people around you that you care about? What was that like?
It was kind of relief and kind of like exciting moment, same time, and be here. It's a great, like I said, it's just a great feeling, and just the experience with my mom and dad and all my brothers. So I mean, it just feels unbelievable.
So if you will put the microphone a little closer to your mouth so we can hear you a little clearer. But you said you had all of your family here. They were able to make it over from Finland.
Yeah. Yeah, all my two brothers and my mom and dad.
Wow, that's exciting because you've been playing over here in North America for the last couple of years. How much have they had a chance to be around you and watch you play here the last couple of seasons?
Not that much. Actually, when I moved here 2 years ago, my mom and dad came with me. They lived 4 months in USA, but I mean, after that, not much. Like, they came for World Juniors in Montreal this winter, but that's about it.
It's a big commitment that you make when you leave your home country to come over here and play. So what went into that decision? Why did you decide to come over here when you did to pursue your dream?
I mean, just to finish junior hockey wasn't good enough. And just the USHL, it's just such a great great league. There's a lot of good players. And just a great hockey. I mean, I learned a lot in past 2 years. So, I mean, it was just a great organization. And, I mean, it's just a great to play in the USHL and just learn the kind of smaller rink game too.
Ellie, over here, the Preds fans obviously listening really want to know because it's something that really was talked about so much during the playoffs, during the Stanley Cup Final. You spoke about it at the podium. What was it like to watch the scene in downtown Nashville, seeing thousands upon thousands of fans outside being excited about hockey and obviously the atmosphere? How does that excite you knowing you're coming to Nashville for that?
I mean, I watched those games when the Nashville playing home, and I was like, one day I wish I could play there. And I mean, the whole crowd was yelling, and I mean, the atmosphere was unreal. You can feel it. I was watching the TV, and I was like kind of feeling it. And I mean, it's just unbelievable to be a part of the Nashville organization. And I mean, they have the best fans in the league, so I mean, I'm pumped.
He's already doing a great job right here. So another one of those things too is catfish has been a prominent thing. I'm sure you saw that talked about as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I did.
Are catfish in Finland? Are you familiar with catfish, the fish, or any kind of traditions like that over in Finland?
Not really. No, I'm not familiar with the catfish though. Yet. But I mean, I can do that too.
Yeah, there's time. There is certainly time for that. So Ellie Tolvanen is with us, first round pick from the Nashville Predators, and Ellie has quite a history of great Finnish players for the Predators. Of course, Pekka Rinne, the headliner. Jussi Saros is a great up-and-coming player. Mika Salamaki, going back a few years, captain Kimmo Tiiminen. I'm sure you follow a lot of these guys growing up in Finland. A lot of players have come over here and made a name for themselves. Who are some of the players you enjoyed watching in Finland growing up?
When I was a little kid, Timo Selänne for sure. Like, he was a goal scorer. And, I mean, just I'm a goal scorer too. I like to score goals. Scoring goals. So I mean, just watching Timo have a great career in the NHL and score all those goals, and I mean, it was just unreal to watch him play. And I mean, Koivu brothers too. And now there's actually now a couple past 2 years there's Laine and Aho, and it's just unbelievable to watch all those Finnish guys like being top players and you know all those teams.
Well, Timo Selänne scored a lot of goals against the Predators. I can tell you that. The Predators have survived his career and have moved forward here. But as you mentioned, that is your skill set. You're a goal scorer. How did you learn? Where do you learn that to be a great shooter and a guy who can really, you know, shoot to score and be effective in doing that? Where'd you learn that skill?
I mean, just work hard a lot with my brothers. And I mean, after school, every day we went backyard and just shooting pucks. And I mean, just a lot of work. I put a lot of work in my shot. And I mean, that's about it.
Ellie Tolvanen is with us. Jeremy Gover has made it back over here as we do the microphone shuffle. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Ellie, what is your plans for going forward? I know, obviously, every player wants to make the team straight out of the draft and all that, but what's kind of your kind of realistic plan going forward?
I mean, I have to work on still some stuff, and I mean, just spend like 1 year somewhere else and just work on those little things and where I'm not like my weakness still, and I think I'm going to be ready at the NHL after 1 year and somewhere else.
And what was your experience like in the USHL? I mean, just because that league is really flourishing, and you were a part of that for the last 2 years.
I mean, it's a great league. There's a lot of great players, and I mean, there's just a lot of draft picks from USHL, and it's a great developing league. There's a lot of young players and great coaching staff, and so I mean, it's cool to be a part of the USHL path.
And finally, for me at least, are you able to take in this whole experience? Is it a blur? What's the whole thing been like for you, or is it going to take a few days to really sink in?
Probably take like a couple days. I mean, just to kind of understand what just happened. I mean, this has been my dream since day one when I started playing hockey. I mean, but yeah, just to like kind of blur still. But I mean, I think it's going to be great.
All right, now Sioux City, I'm guessing, is not a city that a lot of us in Nashville spent a lot of time. What's the best thing about Sioux City playing there?
Best thing about Sioux City, movie theater.
Movie theater, okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's $5 movies on Tuesdays. That was
you can't beat that.
Every week we went with all the boys, and I mean, that was about it. That city, there's not much to do. I mean, there's a hockey rink, casino, and the movie theater.
Well, I'm sure you're going to have some great memories having played there. First place you go, you know, in the States is there. You'll have good memories, but hopefully there's some great memories to come in Nashville. Let me say, Ellie, you look great in gold. The brand new jersey that you're modeling here, it's looking pretty good. Congratulations on a great night, and welcome to Nashville. Can't wait to get you into the city, check it out, and watch you play with the rest of the guys.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, good stuff. That is Ellie Tolvanen, who was the 30th pick overall, Predators' first-round pick, 18-year-old from Finland, as you just heard there with Willie Donick, also Justin Bradford and Jeremy Gover there in Chicago over the weekend. Great coverage here yet again on 102.5 The Game, being where you're supposed to be, giving you coverage out there from the draft Friday night and Saturday afternoon. And that was Predators' first-round pick shortly after he was drafted, playing for the Sioux City Musketeers. Translation to your question, Willie, what is cool about Sioux City? Absolutely nothing.
Sioux City, Iowa.
That was the translation.
He basically broke it down. Hockey rink, movie theater, casino.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to get in trouble. I guess maybe a casino?
No, you can find trouble.
Actually, Yancey Thickpen just texted me and said, yeah, you can't get in trouble at a casino.
Yeah, you could find trouble just because.
Is that too soon? Too soon? No.
But wasn't that a great answer for? Imagine being in.
You just got that, didn't you? Not too soon.
Oh my goodness, no.
I take it you guys must have been close. You never really laugh hard at my thick pen jokes.
I mean, we wasn't close.
Did he let you borrow his furs?
Nah. I was too cool for a fur coat, man.
He did have to. He had to pay Tunica a lot of money.
Yeah. Once they gave my jersey, I was done with it.
So yeah, there wasn't much to do in Sioux City. Yeah. So these guys,
$5 movies on Tuesday night.
They shouldn't be in trouble. I mean, you have no excuse.
Did they have all the new movies and improve? You know, all
probably
the,
not for the $5
for $5, or were they watching?
It's a good question.
You know, 14 going on 15.
I doubt it's first run. I doubt it's Jaws and Raiders of the Lost Ark, but it's probably somewhere
Transformers
in between.
1.
It's probably somewhere in between.
Harry Potter, you know, first one.
It's probably like Hangover, the first one. So, like, you know, that's pretty new. You're not going to get
Star Wars Episode 1.
You're not
going
to get the third one, but you may get
the original
one.
The original one. Not the remake.
No. Come on.
But I enjoyed his personality. He kind of went with it. He was a bundle of energy.
For an 18-year-old, not bad. Not
well, think
bad
about,
at all.
Think about leaving your home. And this is what a lot of these kids do who are really good players. And it's happening now in the States where they – and the Predators drafted a couple of these guys. You leave home at age 15 or 16, and you go to some far-off place, whether it's in your same country or another country. And so Tolvanen leaves Finland when he's 15 or 16 to go over and play in Sioux City because, as he said, the level of competition was better. So the interesting question going forward for him will be, where does he play next year? He was committed to Boston College, but he was not –
he was rejected.
Admitted, did not admitted to school. And so the choices are to send him to the Canadian Junior League, which would be sort of on par from where he's been playing. And he was dominating this USHL. The other option is he could be he is eligible to play in Milwaukee next year. He'd be one of the youngest players in the AHL.
It sounds like
he might be ready
too much
for that.
Time at the movie
he
theater.
Might be ready. Maybe so. Maybe right? $5 movies.
Was he just got hooked?
School? I don't know.
He got hooked on the $5
well,
movies.
Well, and the other thing is, I mean, keep in mind, English is his second language. Even though his English is really good, it can't be easy to go from, you know, Finland to the U.S. and you're in Sioux City and you're trying to get academically eligible for Boston College, which is a pretty good academic school. So I'm not sure what transfer credit-wise. I mean, there's a lot of different things that could have happened.
Do?
Well, some of it's up to the Predators, I think. As to whether they want to place him on the Milwaukee roster right away.
Milwaukee? Oof.
He's a first-round pick who dominated the USHL, which is about the same as what it would be if he goes to Canadian juniors.
So
they could send him here.
You wouldn't start him in juniors or somewhere lower? They're not in Cincinnati. Where are they now? They're not in Cincinnati.
No, he was, I think, drafted by one of the Canadian junior teams. He goes into a pool, like an entry draft for the Canadian teams. So they have no control. The Predators don't have control where to send him. He would be drafted onto a team. It may have already happened. I'm not sure. But the other option, the Predators can say, we'll sign you to a contract and put you on Milwaukee, which would start the development process.
And speed
but that would be
process.
A pretty good jump. Yeah, it'd be a pretty good jump for him. But that's something maybe this week they will talk about and evaluate him at prospect camp with some of the prospects that are a year or two older than him.
But you heard Jeff Kelty talk about, you know, we're talking about guys like Pontus Ahlberg, but remember, They were drafted in 2012. I mean, it takes time. Rarely, especially in the Predators organization, I feel like they kind of want you to go through the process. They want you to, you know, take steps, forward progress, keep moving toward your goal, but not just throw you into the lion's den right away and learn on the fly. I think they like to go through the process. So it takes, in some
which
cases,
which is why college
years.
Hockey would have been a great step up for him.
Yeah.
But this is why Milwaukee is intriguing. For most of these kids that aren't going to play right away in the NHL, they have to go back to junior. That's the rule. If they come from a junior team, they have to stay in junior until they're 20 before they can play in the AHL. But the fact that he is where he is right now is a loophole. So they have an option of putting him at the AHL level, whereas a guy like Girard had to go back into the Canadian junior system there. So it's an option here. It's usually not an option for a kid playing in juniors.
Ryan in Mount Juliet, what's up?
Hey, I got a question for you guys, and I want to try and get your intake on this. Now, I know Duchesne, as by trade, I know Duchesne wants out of Colorado, sorry. And Vegas is still trying to move pieces. Do you think maybe there could be a four-way trade with Vegas, Vegas, Nashville, Ottawa, and Colorado, where Nashville could go and acquire Mark Messier from Vegas, and Ottawa can go acquire Matt Duchesne from Colorado, and then Duchesne to Mark Messier. So Messier can go back to Ottawa where he wants to be at, and Duchesne can come to Nashville where he wants to be at.
Well, I think we discussed this earlier. I think at this point, kind of seeing the lay of the land on what Joe Sakic wants, it may be getting another team involved. It may be a three-team trade when it's all said and done, whoever the other two teams are going to be. He said four-team, but I don't know. It seems clear, especially on the Predators' end, Willie, they're probably going to need to pull somebody else into this to make it happen, if it were to happen.
It's going to take creativity, it looks like. It looks like it's going to be very hard at this point to go back and forth directly with Colorado here to get Duchesne, although I still think the Predators have a lot of assets to offer Colorado, more so than other teams in the mix. You hear that the Islanders are still in the mix here. The thing that would worry you about the Islanders is they're desperate. They are desperate to keep John Tavares. They've got to convince him to stay. And in order to do that, they've got to make moves that have him going, hey, okay, we can win. So they might go beyond what David Poile reasonably is willing to do, because we talked about David Poile. He is a guy that's not going to mortgage the farm for anybody. He wants a good deal. So creativity, could it be four teams? Sure. Remember the Nomar Garciaparra trade? Way back when the Red Sox traded him, the year that they won the whole thing in 2004, they traded Nomar Garciaparra at the trade deadline. And there were four teams involved in that. The Cubs, if I remember correctly, the Expos, and the Twins were all in the mix there.
The Expos.
That was the last year
How
of the Expos.
About the Expos? Just don't trade Grant Mismatch. I just want to.
That'd be cool.
I want it to play out. I want Mismatch to keep, you know, I want to keep him around. By the way, the development camp today.
Yeah, this week. It's actually fun. You go back through the years, there's been some interesting people come through. Development camp. It's really your first look at them. They'll play, I think.
Favreau will be here today.
Favreau, Girard, the guys they just drafted.
Yeah, so your chance to look at them this week. But yeah. Mismatch, got to keep him around. Got to just for the name. We'll come back. Willie also caught up with Predators general manager David Poile. Some interesting comments from the GM of the year. You will hear that next on 3D 102.5 The Game.
Predators general manager David Poile has been nice enough to stop by here now that it's all a wrap. So David, first of all, congratulations on being named GM of the year. We haven't had a chance to talk to you since then, and it's been a wild week starting in Las Vegas. You come over to Chicago, and it seems like this whole week's been a blur.
It certainly feels like it right now. I mean, everybody's worked really, really hard to get to this point. Our scouts did a great job again in the last couple of days. And I guess this is sort of the, I guess, closure to last season. This is a kickoff to 17-18. So we're already, we've got a lot of people who have been very nice to us in the last week or so, from the Board of Governors meeting to the managers meeting, and recognizing the great season that we had both on and off the ice. So lots of accolades to the Predators and our staff. And very happy about that. But man, we're back in it now. We're starting to plan for next year. So that's the hockey business.
You don't get a chance at all to sit back and enjoy it all. So give us a real quick thought on how the draft went. Not a lot of wheeling and dealing by you guys in terms of your picks, but are you pretty happy with what you got?
Yeah, I think we are. I mean, our scouts got a lot of confidence in them. Jeff Kelty does a really good job. He knows exactly what we need and what we want to get. You know, I think we've worked together for so many years that we know the types of players that we draft, and our scouts do a good job. I really feel on the first pick and Tolvanen that we, in our minds, we got very, very fortunate, you know, being 30th pick. That's a player that we've had in our top 10 all year long. And I've looked at a lot of different other lists that come out and just, you know, reading, and all, to me, nobody ever had him lower than like 20th in the draft. So to me, I feel very fortunate, because it's really the type of player that we're looking for. He's a fast winger that has got an unbelievable release, and he can score goals. I mean, that's the type of player we've been looking for, trying to add to our lineup in the last you know, three or four drafts, these offensive players. And I think we got a really good one there in our first pick. Today in the rounds 2 through 7, just a little bit of variety. You know, we've got a goalie, we've got couple of defensemen, and we got a center, left wing, and right wing. It's almost like a depth chart. The good news is, you know, we got, I think there's three or four of our drafts are going to be going to various universities, and I always like that, if you will, because they can go to school, obviously, up to 4 years. You get a longer look at them, especially guys that you draft a little bit later in the draft, that you probably, you know, they're picked later because they're missing something, and they need some time, and school provides that. So, again, I think we did a good job, and you know, there's nobody that's coming out of this draft that's going to play for our team right away. But again, we filled up the cupboard for another year, and as we've said many times, especially in the playoffs this year, the road to Nashville is through Milwaukee, and 2 or 3 years, these players will be getting into Milwaukee, and then back up to the Predators. So we'll remember this day, and then we'll say how lucky we were to get this guy in like sixth round.
Yeah, it was great to meet some of those guys here in these last couple of days. You just addressed the media just minutes ago, and of course, with you guys losing James Neal, there were a lot of questions about how you shape your roster. And what I heard you say was you did some seed planning in terms of seeing what's out there, possible options there of trades and things like that, but also that you're not desperate to make a trade because you like a lot of these young players.
Exactly. I think, first of all, we learned so much about our organization at the end of the year and in the playoffs, unfortunately due to some pretty critical injuries. But, you know, players that were playing in Milwaukee, like Pontus Aberg, Frederick Gaudreau, they actually played very well in the playoffs, and they had some really impact on our team. So now, you know, sort of what should we do? Should we go outside the organization to try to replace a James Neal, or should we give that ice time maybe not directly to a Pontus Aberg, but maybe Kevin Fiala moves up in the lineup from almost a third line position to a second line position? Maybe Frederick Gaudreau, who we may not have penciled in on our lineup, maybe he starts on the fourth line on our team next year. So I'm kind of weighing that against some of these possible trade opportunities, and also the third aspect would be on July 1st we start free agency. And as we know, everything's free in free agency. I sort of am sarcastic at that, because usually you pay a lot for that. But, you know, there's just a lot of moving parts right now. And as you say, I think we have a really good nucleus on our team. I mean, we know our goaltending set with Pekka and Saros. We know our defense is set exactly how we had it last season. And our forwards, we've lost Neil. I've got to talk to Mike Fisher in the next little while to see if he's going to be coming back, or, you know, we might have to find a player to replace Mike Fisher. So that's where we are today, and we'll be back at it on Monday.
And we are joined live right now with General Manager David Poile, Nashville Predators, from the draft floor here in Chicago. David, back to the draft. Good focus on American players, or players that are playing in American systems, American juniors, USHL, NAHL, the U.S. Development Program. What does it say, especially as an American, for you to see the growth of USA Hockey and how the American talent continues to uprise?
Well, it's terrific, and it's probably, in my mind, maybe the number one area of growth in all of the hockey universe, if you will, when you're drafting players from Florida, Texas, California. I mean, that never happened 10 or 15 years ago, and now it's coming on a regular basis. Again, we've got a strong U.S. Scouting staff, I guess. I mean, led by Jeff Kelty, Paul Fenton, two guys that went to Boston University. I went to school in Boston. My son, Brian, he went to Boston College. So I don't think we're prejudiced. I think we're looking for the best players. But there's no question that the U.S. development program is terrific. And if you look at their success as teams, they're winning all the big tournaments now, all the way up to the World's Junior. So why wouldn't you, you know, gravitate to where the players are playing the best? So, I mean, we've been pretty good, pretty lucky with that. And I don't think there's a reason to vary from that kind of a philosophy.
David, I asked Jeff Kelty earlier in the show about the value you guys seem to get in a lot of your picks. I know we can't speak about your specific list, but you mentioned Tolvanen being high on your list and him being highly ranked on other publications as well, but you picking 30, still got him. A couple of the U.S. Yeah. National Development Team players also were ranked higher than you guys were picked yeah. them. Can you talk about this, the overall, as an umbrella mentality of getting the value that you guys got in this draft?
Well, I mean, it's an understatement to say we hope we're going to do as well, if not better, than every other team. And you got to find that value in the draft. I mean, I don't want to say it's a given that you got to hit on your first round pick, but the gems, the great stories are Patrick Hornquist as being the last player taken in the draft, Pekka Rinne in the eighth round, Martin Erat late in the draft. I mean, the scouts love that, and that's how you make a difference. So, I mean, as we say that there will be in 5 years from now or what have you, we'll look back at this draft, and there'll be an NHL player in every round. Why can't we get that perfect draft? We've never had that perfect draft, but nobody has. But why can't we do that? And I know today, those guys and our staff, they legitimately think that every guy that we took is going to play for the Nashville Predators someday. But you know baseball pretty good. You know, if you can hit, 300 in baseball, you're in the Hall of Fame. And I guess in hockey, if between two and three picks a year in the draft out of seven rounds, you're probably in the NHL Hall of Fame.
All right, David, before we let you go, just rapid fire, a couple things you touched on in your recent press conference here that you jokingly, but I think seriously said, when it comes to trade rumors, you traded enough defensemen. You're not looking to trade any of the defensemen you have right now.
No, obviously we're really happy with our defense. They played spectacular this year, and especially in the playoffs. They're our core. I mean, you talk about why you win games. I think the defense drives our team right now, and it would take an awful lot for me to change my mind right now on that.
And, of course, you said Ryan Ellis, a very important part of that defense core. You're going to get an update on his health condition, his offseason here in the coming days.
Next week we'll get an update on Ryan and his injury status.
And finally, you have a great guy in Phil Housley that's moved on to be a head coach, and now you are searching for his replacement.
Yes, Lavi interviewed three people here in Chicago this week when we're here, and we're going to go back, meet together at our development camp next week and see if he wants to interview any more people, and hopefully we'll have a decision. I'm not saying it'll be next week, but hopefully in the next couple of weeks.
All right, David, thanks a lot for stopping by here. It's been a whirlwind week. Relax a little bit. I know you got a plane to catch here. Hopefully it's on time. You get back to Nashville, get some rest tonight.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right, that is David Poile, Nashville Predators general manager.
All right, more great coverage that we heard Friday and Saturday from Chicago at the United Center, and that was a part of it Saturday afternoon, Willie, as you guys were wrapping everything up. Good questions there at the end. Let's start with the who will be the replacement for Phil Housley. Interviewing guys, how does that work on the NHL side? Because general manager's going to have input. Head coach obviously has to have input. In the end, do you have to come together, or does Peter Laviolette? I mean, how does that work on the hockey side of getting that next guy after losing Housley?
That's a really good question. I don't know if David Poile, he seemed to indicate that Peter Laviolette was conducting the interviews. So I don't. He may have just said, Peter, whoever you like, you make
the call.
But
Phil Housley, in fairness, right, he got here because David Poile said he identified him. This is a guy we want. Or Phil, basically, David Poile brought him here and said, Barry, this is your assistant coach.
And beyond that, before Peter Laviolette was here and Barry Trotz was still the head coach, David Poile said, we're making a change. We're bringing in Phil Housley.
Right.
And unfortunately,
so
that
was the general manager making the call.
Bad news for Peter Horacek. Yes.
Right.
So it can be done in different ways. But I think the situation where it is now, I think Peter Laviolette sounds like he's going to have a lot of input.
Does he have another Kevin McCarthy type that he's been around?
I don't know.
Through the years? So I'm just curious if there's like an obvious dot to connect on the next, or is David Poile like the Phil Housley move, which, as we just saw, was a good move 4 years ago because now he's a head coach in the NHL. So has David Poile got another guy he's been thinking about? Or is it a guy within the system, somebody already on board, somebody in the organization?
Not sure. And one thing I heard David Poile say was that the versatility of Kevin McCarthy gives Peter Laviolette a lot of options. In other words, it's not somebody that has to come in and do exactly what Phil Housley was doing, work with the defenseman, run the power play. Those were his two focal points while he was here. Kevin McCarthy was a defenseman in the NHL for a long time. He can run the defense. He can run the power play if need be. So you can just bring in the best assistant coach available, and whatever role his strengths are, Kevin McCarthy will fill in the gap the other way. That's the advantage of having a veteran guy like McCarthy who has done it all. A couple other things, Darren, that we didn't get to.
I want to hit on the Mike Fisher. You asked him about Mike Fisher, and we're all trying to figure this out. I was on Channel 4 last night. Big Joe Dubin was nice enough to have myself, Joe Rexroad, and Mickey Ryan in there. Kind of he called it the sports reporter. So we did the whole Sunday night sports show on Channel 4 last night. And, of course, talking about the Predators, one of the questions is, what's the captain going to do? What's Mike Fisher going to do? So everybody's trying to look into everything. Is there a hint here? I was telling you guys off the air. Last night I watched the final episode of Showtime, the All Access. And, you know, Mike Fisher has kind of the heartfelt speech at the end when it's over, after Game 6. And it almost felt like he was saying goodbye. But, you know, you don't really know what that – David Poile kind of threw out the hint. Well, you know, maybe we'll be looking for a play. So we're all trying to figure out – they're going to have an answer here soon enough. Do you think internally they know one way or the other, or do you think they're literally sitting there waiting for the phone call from Mike Fisher to say thumbs up or thumbs down?
I think they have a feeling about it, and I think if you listen to David Poile's answer when he was talking about it briefly there, it certainly sounded like when he said, I'm going to be talking to Mike Fisher in the coming days here, he said, we might have to be looking for a forward to replace him. He didn't say, he may or may not. You know, maybe we're reading into it the wrong way. But I think the feeling is it's more likely than not that he's not coming back, but they want to talk to him. They want to give him time, and only then will they know for sure. So I don't think that they know. I think they are preparing for an offseason in which they will have to go forward without him. But if he says, I want to come back, they will say, right on.
Agreed, but I still think – We keep seeing these things, and everything seems, the signs, when we're reading into it, we're trying to read into it, it seems like it keeps pointing to that was it.
I think it would be more likely, if I had to predict, not knowing, those are the signals that I'm getting.
Watching the Showtime piece, just in the locker room afterward, you know, that's emotional. It's after you've just been eliminated from this incredible run. But it just seems like we keep coming back to the same thing. It feels like it may be coming to an end. But that could change. It's going to be his decision. But it kind of feels like, all right, last thing real quick. Ryan Ellis. What is the story on Ryan Ellis? Why don't we have an update? Usually when it's over, you just come out with the list. And this is what everybody's got. This guy's having surgery. This guy's done for 2 to 3 months. Still nothing on what really is going on with Ryan Ellis.
Good question. And I wondered the same thing when he said that. And I guess time will tell. But I think I would look back not at the injury that knocked him out or didn't knock him out, but compromised him in the Stanley Cup final. I would look back at the two different times that he had to leave games. One was late in the game in Columbus. Remember where he basically was limping off. He had to be dragged off the ice a couple of different times. I think it's going to stem from that. If I had to guess, that's me speculating. It also looks like, and this was not in our interview, but it was in the press conference, David Poile says Vern Fiddler and P.A. Parenteau, they will basically let go into free agency. Harry Zolnarchuk, they've talked to him. They have interest in bringing him back. I don't know that it's going to be a one-way contract. Harry Zolnarchuk's career has basically been that 4A guy, basically a two-way contract. He's available to you, but you can also send him to the minors. And I think Harry Zolnarchuk has a lot of interest in coming back here. I feel like they will have him in the mix going forward here, maybe before free agency starts, but we'll see.
Hour number three, we come back. We head east. We bring in Vince Ferrara from WNML. We'll talk about the Vols, some things going on. Big weekend yet again for Butch Jones and his staff. We'll tell you about that and more next on 3D 102.5 The Game.